Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and just got it connected just in time because we got a great show for you today. One person that has come into the valley that we can all get excited about, Michael Badnarik, will be here at the end of the month here in Phoenix, Arizona, and we're going to make sure he gets a really big shoe, and he gets to visit with us here at Freedom's Phoenix Studios, which I don't think he's been here. Michael, I got you there.
You do. Thanks, Ernie.
Hey, have you been to our studios before?
No, not in Phoenix.
Oh, we're going to have us some fun. You know, starting tomorrow for next few days, Gary Franchi from Restore the Republic is coming. He's going to stay at my home for a few days as he uses as a base, and we'll be on the radio a little bit and so on. But he's doing some more research on his FEMA camps and mandatory vaccinations, and Arizona's always the center of the universe. So he's going to come here and tour around the state and go look at some of the camps and different things that, you know, we've kind of scoped out for them. And so we're going to have some fun with that. But what you're doing is on a, you know, kind of the other side, you know, the good side, you know, the better side of government, that we can save the republic. We can say, you know, can we? You know, what is it you're going to be talking about?
Well, I have an 8-hour class on the Constitution that focuses on the differences between rights and privileges and how the government is supposed to work. It's, you know, one thing to know what you don't like, but you can't really solve the problem unless you know what you do like. I mean, we can sit here and spend an hour complaining about all the things wrong with the government, but unless we know what it's supposed to look like, if it's working correctly, we're really not going to get too much further than complaining. So my class basically talks about the Constitution and Bill of Rights and gives you a point of view that the Founding Fathers had on life, liberty, and private property.
Well, what did they say?
Well, they said that all those things were important. And the only way that you can achieve life, liberty, and property is to put limitations on other people's whims. Specifically, the government. Anytime you have a government that has a monopoly on the use of force, you want to make sure that you've got that government constrained and clearly outline what they can and cannot do. And
you're never going to do that if they got a monopoly of force.
Well, see, they don't have a monopoly of force. That's what the Second Amendment is all about. And that's what this liberty movement, I mean, you and I have been in the liberty movement for a long time, but you got to admit that a lot of people just in the last 2 years have jumped on board. They're starting to, now you and I can talk about the Federal Reserve not being a federal agency, and people don't think we're wearing aluminum foil hats. All these different organizations have been cropping up. People are realizing that it's not the way it's supposed to be.
You know, when we come back, we're going to get down into the clad, you know, whet your appetite for what's going to come to Phoenix, because not only is it going to be the information shared, it's going to be the people that are with you having it shared with. Oh, it's going to be a party when Michael Badnarik comes to Phoenix. We'll talk about more when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Former Libertarian presidential candidate nominee in 2004 that won with the excitement of an entire room against some heavy challengers. You know, we had, he was running against Aaron Russo, you know, of America from Dreaming to Fascism. In fact, the fact that Michael prevailed in that is, you know, Aaron had something to say, so he went and did America from Freedom to Fascism, and it all worked out for everybody because Michael got to be all the hardcore, no compromise, constitutionalist kind of guy on the campaign trail. Did first, do no harm. advocate libertarian principles in his pure and great and wonderful and educated way. That's what he keeps doing. But now we're, you know, he's always given a constitutional class. That's how, you know, he makes sure that whenever he's traveling, he has that as an opportunity instead of just, you know, you're not going to just give Michael money. You know, you get, I'm sure he'll take it, but, you know, he goes, no, please. Let me give you something. Let me give you some information. Let me educate you. We'll have, instead of just, you know, let's do around doing hors d'oeuvres, you know, we'll do some work. We're going to sit down, we're going to learn about the Constitution, and that way you can feel like you got something for your money. Well, you know, that's what he's been doing around the country for a long time. In fact, that's how he won the nomination to be a Libertarian candidate for Libertarian Party for President of these United States in 2004. Got a lot of fans, man, I tell you, Michael. And but I want to make sure that after I have taken your class, I am more informed about what? What am I learning?
The philosophy. I mean, why do we have any government at all?
I've been asking that a lot lately.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people are willing to just go without government at all. And that's the option. Unfortunately, because there are weird people in the society, you know, most people want a little bit of government to take care of the bad guy. And the question is, what kind of government, you know, is the best?
That doesn't produce a bunch of bad guys.
That's right. Exactly. And that's one of the things the Founding Fathers struggled with. How do you create a government that keeps control of the people and then keeps control of the government as well? And that's why they had a division of power, legislative, executive, and judicial, and that's why all the important things were based on the will of the people.
What do you mean by keep control of the people? I mean, how do you define that?
Well, basically what you and I want to do is we want to be left alone. You know, we've got our stuff, our property, and I've boiled the Constitution down to 7 words. Don't hurt me. Don't take my stuff. That's what the Constitution is all about. Don't hurt me. Don't take my stuff. Now, most of us, or at least, you know, most of my friends, are willing to take responsibility for their own self-defense, for their own protection. But, you know, sometimes you get a motorcycle gang or somebody that's a little bigger than you, and you'd like to get a little bit of help. And so, you know, government is basically organized to maintain domestic tranquility, to make sure that nobody's hurting each other and nobody's taking anybody else's stuff. In fact, those are the two divisions of law. Criminal law is all about don't hurt me, and civil law is don't take my stuff. And just about everything that we talk about with government or law falls under one of those two categories.
You know, I understand the promise. You know, I've seen this graph done one time. It was a really good piece done on TED Talks. You ever see TED Talks, or just like big auditoriums that people talk about various different things, and it's TEDTalks.com, and they talk about all kinds of different stuff. And one time, this one presentation somebody gave in this big auditorium, it was really fascinating. He started on a graph. You have the vertical and the horizontal line in the bottom left-hand corner. You start there, and you have the promise of government. You know, there's this promise. It's like a 45-degree angle. It goes up. They keep promising as time goes along. Or promising more and more and more and more and more. And then reality is, you know, kind of stays along with it there at first. Certainly, you know, we have Declaration of Independence. You know, we promise we're going to be independent. Okay, well, we get that. And we promise we're going to leave you alone. Okay, we get that. And sooner or later, reality and the promise start to diverge. And you get to a point that the distance between what is really going on and what they promised is so great that government just loses total legitimacy. And I'm at the point now to where, you know, the promise that we should be protected against the organized thugs of whatever, fill in the blank, and I'm going, who's going to protect me against those that were supposed to protect me? And they don't even have on their cars anymore protect and serve. They just, you know, it didn't ring true, and they just took it off the vehicles. You know, so I'm going, okay, so now now we have, under the promise that you're going to protect me against the roving gangs of whatever, now I got roving gangs with a shiny badge and the Thor tie of the government. And I'm wondering, at what is it that we have to do? What is the responsibility that we have? How did we get here? What is it that we did wrong? Was it just having government, or was it we weren't paying attention? Were we lied to? Did they prey on our good intentions? You know what?
It is a lack of ignorance, lack of information, and laziness. Electricity is not the only thing that takes the path of least resistance. In fact, a lot of our problems are caused because most of us are good people. Most of us really don't want to get involved. If you and I are at a restaurant and somebody comes in with a boombox and they've got music or maybe they're smoking, I mean, we don't get up and challenge the other person. It's just a lot easier for you and I to move to another table, maybe even go to another restaurant. And so we try to avoid that conflict. Well, the problem is that in that avoidance, while it may be okay on one or two basis, what you do is you let the gangs move in, and then the problem gets so bad that it's more difficult to handle. You know, it's like the difference between a trash can fire and a forest fire. You know, trash can fire is a lot easier to put out, but nobody thinks that it's bad enough to need the water. Nobody wants to step up and make the effort. Well, by the time the forest is on fire, it's almost an unsolvable problem. So the problem politically that we have is because people have been asleep at the wheel. Our parents and grandparents basically ignored what was going on. And, you know, we end up with fiat money, government out of control, health care that's about to be shoved down our throat or possibly other body orifices, and people don't know what to do. And, you know, I think that if you understand the way life is supposed to be, it doesn't make the problem go away, but it at least gives you a perception of the problem that it is solvable.
Using what? How? I mean, first...
Well.
You know, see, first you say, you know, first do no harm, you know, don't hurt me, don't take my stuff. And then I'm, you know, from the very beginning, we had the Whiskey Rebellion. I mean, you know, right off the bat, first president, George Washington raises, I don't know, 12, 15,000 people to go put down these people who didn't want to have a tax on their whiskey. So I don't take my stuff. I mean, at what, except when? I mean, what's he accept?
Well, there's no exception to don't hurt me. There's no exception to don't take my stuff. That's the goal. Now, how are we going to get there? Well, you can either do it yourself or have somebody help you. And we've been letting the government do it for so long that they've gotten lazy. It's the lack of responsibility across the nation is what I would focus on as cause of our dilemma. Two people have children. They have a responsibility to feed the children, shelter the children, and teach the children. But parents have been sending their children off to school, letting the government and the teachers do read and write and arithmetic. And now we've got high school kids graduating who are functionally illiterate. And the parents are upset because the government didn't do their job. It's your responsibility in the first place. So it's our responsibility to keep the government within the limitations that have been set down in the Constitution, or if the Constitution is not working, we can throw that away and try again. But it's an ongoing problem. As long as there are people, there are going to also be evil people. And the good people are going to have to do something to take care of the evil people.
You know what? I just don't want to give them a badge. You know, you create a monopoly on forces, you say. Let me tell you who wants to get it. The bad guys. You know, we'll talk about this some more because I think this is a fascinating subject. We need to understand, you know, what path are we going down? I mean, it was definitely a big improvement on, you know, eons before, or was it? We'll talk about it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
William Wallace, you stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Yeah, you're going to get purified. You know, it matters not. He is your king. And this is my number one complaint, Michael. Am I allowed to say none of the above? And nope. And consent of the governed means what? We have on Freedom's Phoenix today, as a matter of fact, there was a article that says 26% of the people, 23% say U.S. government has consent of the governed. A Rasmussen poll. A new Rasmussen Reports National Telephone Survey finds that just 23% of voters nationwide believe the federal government today has the consent of the governed. 62% says it does not, and 15% are not sure. And I'm. Is that what we got to do? We got to go to a Rasmussen poll, or can I just say, you know, I choose not to be governed? I mean, how does the Constitution relate to that?
Well, the Constitution allows us to do that. The Constitution does not apply to you or me. The Constitution only applies to Congress, the White House, and the Supreme Court. And, you know, anybody working as a government agent, anybody who raises their hand to swear an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, they are the ones who have taken a solemn oath. They have a fiduciary responsibility, and the rest of us can file lawsuits against them if they violate that fiduciary responsibility. But if we don't know it, if we're not willing to stand up and defend it, I mean, well, let's assume that, you know, you and I are sitting at the restaurant and, you know, some guy comes over and takes the croissant off of your tray. Well, what are you going to do about it? If you don't do anything about it, the guy just ripped off your croissant. At some point, you know, you got to get up and stand up for your property. You know, at very least, go and take it back. And most Americans, they're just coming to the realization that the government has been ripping them off. And with the number of guns and the amount of ammunition that people have been buying, I don't think it's because they're taking up an interest in quail hunting. I think that we are going to see some very interesting times in the very near future.
Well, this is my point. You know, it's like the Chicago gun law thing. We have the Supreme Court comes down and says, you know what? Yeah, it is an individual right. And gosh darn it, we say Chicago and the state of Illinois can't do whatever. And they go, really? You know, about the state's rights thing and the sovereignty? And then they go, nope. All the gunnies, all you conservatives, all the Republicans, you guys like that when we do that, didn't you? And then I can see it coming. It's going to be a year or two from now. And they go, oh, you liked it when we supported individual gun rights, you know, but you don't like it when we're going to use the force of the federal government to fill in the blank, you know, whatever the heck right. They want to do. I see this coming already. And I'm just like, you know, if we had a consistent understanding of what the Constitution is. It says Congress shall make no law in the Bill of Rights. Well, I mean, they should just stop right there. But, you know, the thing is that we have a understanding of this federal government as something that it was never supposed to be. In fact, that was the promise to get the states to ratify it. They promised all kinds of stuff. And the thing is that you say, well, we can sue them. I mean, am I okay? Well, once I get into court, you have a lot of the Patriot guys going on about this stuff. You know, once you cross the bar, once you get in there, once you, you know, go and take an oath, tell the truth, you're in their game. Okay. You already acquiesced to their rule. And I'm going,
I agree.
So I'm not allowed to be, an unconsenting non-governed. You know what I mean? I can tell already. It's like when you and I went to Jekyll Island, and you were president of the Continental Congress, for Bob Schultz and all.
Eventually, I wasn't president at Jekyll Island.
No. You got elected at the Continental Congress. I understand, but we had both gone there. And my whole reason for going and representing one idea, and the reason that I chose not to go to Chicago, was because I just wanted to have the option to advocate for the option of none of the above. Because if I don't get to have the option, regardless of what I pick, and I got to, pick the lesser evil kind of whatever, I'm like, no, I'm not playing that game. If I don't have the option of saying, you know what, I vote total freaking, nobody rule me, I rule myself, thank you very much, I'm off the grid. If I don't have that option, then I didn't have an option.
I'm on your side, Ernie. I really am. I want people to leave me alone. I mean, I'm willing to do my own self-defense. The problem is that if you and I believe that cannibalism is a bad thing, and we go walking through the jungle and we come into a clearing and we are suddenly surrounded by cannibals, jumping up onto a tree stump and going, hey, you guys are all wrong. You shouldn't be eating people. That's not going to do very much to keep us alive.
All the more reason to walk around with your Gatling gun and friends with Gatling guns. This is, we're going to get into it. We're going to get it because you're right. In that kind of society, we would structure ourselves totally differently. And in past, we have. We'll talk about it more when we come back because we all just want to be free, me and Michael both.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. Headlong down the highway and you're rushing headlong out of control. And you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping and you can't stop rocking. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah! There, because Michael Badnarik is going to learnify us. He's going to teach us all about the Constitution. He's coming here at the end of the month here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA, and we're going to take advantage of his knowledge. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of questions you're going to have from a lot of people here, and I think it's going to spark a lot of good conversation. But from the beginning, let's go back to the beginning. The Constitution, that whole process was created based on what promise? I mean, we're gathering here today, says Alexander Hamilton, to what? What were they going to do?
They were actually getting rid of the Articles of Confederation.
Why?
We didn't like the way King George was raising taxes and had control and owned everything. And so we fought the American Revolution. We had the Articles of Confederation, which was basically states' rights. The same way that you and I currently think of France, Germany, Italy, that's the way everybody thought about New York, Pennsylvania, Virginia. They were sovereign and independent states. They were countries, and they were joining together under the Articles of Confederation, basically to protect each other against the world's largest army and navy. And, well, then the private problem with the economy. Each of the states was printing paper money like it was going out of style. So the delegates were sent to Philadelphia to fix the economic problem, and in stepped Alexander Hamilton, usurped the whole thing and said, hey, we're not just going to fix the problem, we're going to rewrite the government and make the government more centralized, a little bit stronger. And yeah, so if I were back in, the 1700s, I would have invited Alexander Hamilton to a duel myself.
So this is, it was always a banker thing. So, I mean, Hamilton, was that his goal from the beginning? Is he wanted some kind of United States bank and be buddies with the other banks and the monarchies or whatever? I mean, it was a bank thing?
Well, he was definitely a bank guy. And I don't know if because he was the first treasurer of the Bank of the United States.
Of course,
but
he was.
I don't know if this was all pre-planned, and he went to Philadelphia knowing that if he didn't get the Constitution, that he would never become the treasurer. So I don't know enough about history or what Alexander Hamilton was thinking, but ultimately it is control of the money that gets most of us screwed up. And in the class, we'll find out without question that the Federal Reserve is blatantly unconstitutional.
Well, you know, it's its fourth incarnation of it. I mean, you know, it had to be unconstitutional, you know, at least three other times. This is wow. I mean, you cannot have, you know, what's a quote from the English, one of the, big banker guys. He says, you know, I don't care what laws you make as long as I get to make the money.
Yeah, that was Rothschild. And this is because those of us who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. I mean, our parents learned these hard lessons, but no, we think we're going to get it right. We think we're going to be able to fall in love and not get our hearts broken. That's going to happen. And so every generation has to learn those lessons all over again because, wow, this is a really great idea. We'll just print up money, and everybody will have all the housing, education, and welfare that they need, and the system doesn't work. And you go, oh, my gosh, you know, we had a Great Depression. Well, we'll never do that again. Well, that's exactly where we're at. I'm guessing 6 to 12 months away from the second Great Depression.
Oh, heck, we're already in it.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're definitely, over the edge of that slippery slope. And I don't think we've hit bottom yet. Right now, we've got approximately 20% unemployment. I figure by next year at this time, the number will be 40%.
Wow. We're nowhere near the bottom. I agree with you on that one. But we're definitely heading there on a rocket sled.
And if there is a silver lining to this cloud, it's that finally, people are going to go, hey, shit, this pretty much hurts, and we got to figure out why this happened. And so all of a sudden, people are going to be interested in, how money is created, what is money, what's the government supposed to be doing about this. There's already a movement. I mean, I hear the words Constitution and libertarian on the news far, far more than I did 10 years ago.
Well, I can tell you why. I mean, here in Arizona, we're kind of ahead of the curve probably at least three election cycles because we've been such buttheads since the early 90s that, you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a politician telling you how libertarian they were, before 9/11. So it's,
right.
We're in a different environment here. Well, what happens is during that, they need to link libertarian and Constitution as if they're the same thing, and they're not. They are not. Now, a libertarian can certainly pay homage to and respect the Constitution and principles behind it and kind of, all right, we'll compromise that much. Because there was a libertarian compromise that was made before, back when they started this. It was called the Bill of Rights. And they did this central plan, and they go, oh, we're going to have us another revolution. Here we go. Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine, Jefferson, bring it on. Hamilton. And so what happened? They decided, all right. We'll give you this Bill of Rights thing, all the thou shalt nots of Congress, what we can't do, if you'll come on board then. And then Rhode Island still said, screw you, we're not going to play. So what'd they do? They boycotted Rhode Island. This is bad, man.
Well, I understood. And it's the same thing. If somebody takes your croissant to the cafeteria, if you don't stand up and do something about it, you get your stuff ripped off and you don't have anything to eat. And so it's a cycle. It's a human cycle. Bad people win for a while, and then finally the good people just get sick and tired of all this, and they stand up and they kick some royal butt. And we've gotten so bad that, again, most of they've purchased millions and millions of guns over the last couple of years, almost all of the ammunition. And I don't know where all these guns and bullets are going.
In my safe, around my bed, inside of my refrigerator, behind the back door, at my kid's house, at my friends, my parents, I make no secret about it. I mean, I don't really have all the guns like a lot of people I know do, but I'm just, you know, if I have, somebody needs, I tell you how I accumulate guns. Somebody knows that if they come, they need money, somebody that I know, and they say, hey, man, do you want this 357 nice I've had since whatever, and I need a few hundred dollars, and it's not going to lose value, and oh, by the way, there's no paperwork. And I'd be going, you know what? You're my new best friend, and here you go, and you done.
I love it. But, I mean, I can only shoot one gun at a time, and I've probably got three or four times as much ammunition as I'll ever be able to shoot.
That's just currency.
You know, yeah. Oh, absolutely, it's currency. You know, I can trade that ammunition for food and chicken and stuff later.
Michael, have been advocates of peace. I mean, we are not the guys going out there going militia, just go get kick some butt. We have been, you know, our activities, you know, as long as I've known you and, you know, the time that we both spend in this effort has been for a peaceful revolution, a peaceful transition of understanding, a revolution between the ears. How many daisies can we put in? How many gun barrels we can find? This is not going to be a successful revolution if we have to use violence on violence. If you do that, you already lost. So I do not advocate that. My biggest threat, seriously, it's gotten to the point that I am less fearful of the government coming and invading my house as I am the galloping hordes that are hungry and have no sustenance, and they know, oh my goodness, Ernie probably has a little bit of extra food, and here they come as a result of government policies. In fact, the government almost, you know, expecting it, wants it, needs it, justifies their existence. It's just a vicious cycle that I want to break. And I want to go with the understanding, if we understand the same reasons that the libertarians of the day insisted, the anti-federalists insisted on something like the Bill of Rights for it to even get past being a non-starter with this central government thing. If we have the same understanding that they did, we have the same education that Michael is going to teach us at the end of the month. If we get that education, then maybe, especially you have a bunch of us out there advocating, you know, I vote none, you know, that at least when we, if we maintain this republic, if we maintain this country, if it survives what's coming, it will be with a renewed understanding of why it was done the way, what was the promise, what got in the way, how did it grow outside of the box, what did they do that violated the Constitution that then they set up their own guys in black robes to determine, oh yeah, it's constitutional, you know why, because we said. And I'm going, well, there was the first problem right there. You let them decide what was and wasn't constitutional. How do we fix that?
Well, even if we, let's hypothesize that you and I pontificate and everybody gets it and we restore peace and freedom. The problem is that our children will go, yeah, Ernie and Mike really had it right. The grandchildren and great-grandchildren will be going, eh, it was not that big a deal, because they'll be living in the lap of luxury. They'll get lazy and some slime bag is going to come up and go, hey, how about if we generate paper money, and it's all going to start all over again? It's because we let it slip away in the first place.
It's because we have a government that allows it to happen. You know, I am
We have a population that allows it to happen.
No, the population will always create a government to let it happen. I mean, you know, I am of the opinion that
Let's make government illegal.
Yay! In our minds.
Yeah, well, that's what this revolution's all about. We got to change the way that people think.
No, I'm with you there, brother.
That's what I do. That's my passion. You know, liberty's the answer. What's the question?
Absolutely. You know, the one thing that you've been very successful, you have a lot of respect from a lot of people, is your knowledge of the Constitution and what the promise was. And then there's the reality, and I'm really interested in going to your event and making sure that, because you and I have talked for hours and hours and hours and hours over years, and my whole thing is there is that promise, there's the reality, and I want to examine here, you know, for the next couple of minutes, how we got from that. I mean, what was it that, is there some main thing that you're pointing at and you go, you know, this is how the promise got escaped from reality. You know, the reality just wasn't able to keep up with the promise. And I'm wondering, you know, was it, is it because we were too trusting? Is it because we were taken advantage of? Do we need to be, make human beings more cynical? Do we need to be more assertive and aggressive on government? Every time some bureaucrat or politician comes up, do we go up and put a pie in their face? I mean, you know, what do we got to do to stop it?
Well, the answer is we've got to make people more and more cynical. Each generation has to be, you know, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And Ernie, you and I mean, we don't even sleep at night because we're being vigilant. And but we can't force other people to do that. Other people get lazy. They go, yeah, okay, Mike and Ernie are doing a really great job. I can kind of kick back. So it's a human nature problem more than a constitution or political problem.
You know, I really am forgiving, you know, of humanity, because I do think they're inherently decent. They want to do what's the right thing. They believe, you know, hey, I believe it. It was in print. It was on TV. It was on the radio. They wouldn't lie openly like that because they know that they wouldn't do it. They just can't imagine that they would be so overt that you get Sean Hannity and, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Keith Olbermann and whoever the heck they go up on freaking television, look you straight in the eye, and lie their ass off. And I'm going, you know, these people are going, you know, they just don't think that way. And I don't want to beat that out of them. I just want them to be aware and have a sense of justice, or just knowledge that they go, you know, they have no credibility anymore. I don't listen to them. I don't look to them for the truth. I look to Michael Badnarik, which will be here at the end of the month in Phoenix, Arizona. And I encourage people to go to and have this conversation. But you need to have the information and the history of what the Constitution promise was and how we got away from that to have any hope that we're ever going to get back to that, because the Constitution was not what did it. It's the people behind it and the promise and the link to reality that did it. It was over time, it created a mechanism by which they go, oh, you mean all I got to do is just pass a law, unconstitutional as heck, and it'll be the law of the land until they rule it unconstitutional. And oh, by the way, if we appoint the right justices, they'll say it's constitutional and you find yourself in a free speech zone. That's what happens. So I'm going, okay, so where is the secret dial? It's us. You know, and that's what Michael's going to help us with, right?
Absolutely. And I want to let your listeners know that after class is from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. At 6 o'clock, I usually go to a restaurant, and everybody in class is invited, and you can ask any question under the sun. And sometimes that lasts till 10, midnight. I went to Buffalo, New York, and they kept me awake until 2 o'clock in the morning, which is another 8 hours. So the one guarantee I can make is that you will not be bored.
No boredom. This
no
is,
boredom.
I you know, I'll tell you, there's, you know, you were at Porcupine Festival, too.
And, I was.
And, you know, and that, if that wasn't the perfect example of just none, I mean, they were none. You know, we're going to organize ourselves based on none, okay? And that is what the future I see is coming. It is an understanding, and anything that is going to be an improvement on none is at least going to have none as an option in the minds of the young. None. I vote none. Now you got to come up with something better. We'll talk about it more when we come back with Michael Badnarik in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Former libertarian nominee for President of the United States, back in 2004, and his reputation just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better and better as time goes on, certainly compared with some of the other nominees. You know, the one thing that I wanted to make sure in this final segment, Michael, is I wanted to give me a promo on your class. You know, let's go ahead. You know, the people, I know it's really, really popular with a lot of people, and I want you to just give a promo so people know what to expect.
First of all, everything is based on the difference between rights and privileges. A right is inherent. It is something that you can do without asking. Your dreams are inherent. Your thoughts are inherent. Your rights are inherent. Nobody gives you your rights, especially the Constitution. You are born with those rights. On the other hand, a privilege is something that someone allows you to do. Somebody of a higher authority gives you permission. You get a concealed carry permit. You get a driver's license. And those privileges can be taken away. So that's a significant concept, is that a privilege can be revoked, whereas a right is inherent. Now, we the people have rights. We give the government privileges. And we can take those privileges away from the government anytime we want. That's what the Declaration of Independence means when it says we have the right to alter or abolish the government. So given that power structure, we the people are on top, state governments are below us, and the federal government is at the bottom. The federal government is supposed to be the least powerful. And that's why so many states have passed 10th Amendment resolutions reminding the government, the federal government, that, you know, they don't have the power to override the state law. Now, let me just keep everybody on track that just because the state government has more power than the federal government does not mean that the state government can violate your religion, violate your freedom of speech, take away your guns, or do any of that. Now, who's responsible for keeping the state government in check? Well, that would be us.
Well, see, that's a good point. I mean, this is where I'm talking about the federal government coming with the Second Amendment decision in Chicago, is that, you know, the Constitution was really applied to the federal government. You know, they can't screw me, okay? Well,
yeah.
We have the states, and here in Arizona, we were the last state in the continental United States here before Alaska and Hawaii that became a state in 1912. We got our centennial coming up, and our state constitution rocks. I mean, it's pretty clear. It says, thou shalt not. And it's like, you know, in Article 2, or the, was it? Yeah, I think it's Article 2 is the whole Declaration of Rights, and it's first thing, the purpose of government, defend individual rights. And it gets down to, like, you know, Section 30 goes, oh, by the way, go see number one. I mean, and I go, very cool, very cool. But the thing is that, you know, are we going to go to the federal government saying the states are violating my, I mean, that's a mistake right there, just that thinking.
Yeah.
I get the impression that they go, ha-ha, we got them now, you know, because they're coming to us.
That's right. Anytime you give someone else the responsibility, you're giving up the responsibility that you have. You know, it's our responsibility. And when you say none, you want none. Well, you don't want government to be responsible. That means all of the responsibility is ours. And we have to be responsible for that stuff.
You know, thanks for coming on, Michael. And go ahead and give out the details of your event. We have it up on freedomsphoenix.com. We got some banner ads there. You go freedoms with an S, phoenix.com, and top banner ad, you'll see links to Michael Badnarik's events. Go ahead and give out a webpage that you want them to know, real quick.
Institutionpreservation.org.